Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. This is Bo Caldwell, CFP, President of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. I do really appreciate everyone out there who is listening, who downloads the podcast. We do post the shows to the podcast, iTunes, Google Play, iHeart Music, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. It's there for free as a replays of the show. You can also visit investingsimplifiedradio.com or www.pfgwm.com, where we have older shows posted there as well. We also have a lot of great resources on our website that people have liked. Quizzes that you can take, different things, retirement readiness scores, different things like that, that are totally free, no obligation, that we have there on the website just as a resource for folks. And we are revamping our website a little bit to give some more content as well, to give people, actionable items they can use in their everyday life, as well as we have links if you want to order Chuck's book on Amazon, any of those other things. As a reminder, if you have a question that you'd like us to cover as we continue through this, what is this, 6 months of COVID-19, of this quarantine, sort of life that we are living now. So we are not able to take your phone calls over the air right now, unfortunately. But if you have a question that you'd like to have answered, you want one of our experts, whether it's myself or Taylor or Kevin, to answer those questions, shoot that question over to askbo@pfgwm.com. We'd love to, answer it on here for you. Love to talk about it. Love to talk about the things that are keeping you up at night, because that's really what's most important for this program for us, is to bring you the content that is applicable to you, things that will help you in your financial life, or things that have been, keeping you up at night. One of the things I wanted to talk about here in the open is just the market. And we haven't spent a whole lot of time in the last, couple of weeks, maybe the last month, talking specifically about market fluctuations and what we see happening in the market. And that's a question I get almost every day from clients, from listeners, from folks just in general that find out what I do. They ask, what's going to happen in the market going forward? What's going to happen with the election? What's going to happen, with this, with that? And the reality is that we really don't know what exactly is going to happen. But what I can tell you that I see happening in the near future and in the future as we go along is more volatility or fluctuations in the market. We've got lulled into this sense of stability over the last few years up until 2018. And then even after the, we had the, you call it the flash crash, what do you want to call it, at the end of 2018 and, in October, November, December, where the market had a pretty severe correction, which is healthy, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But it had a pretty severe correction. We'd lost a lot of value in the overall stock market, and then it rip-roared back. And if you were just riding the S&P 500 through 2019, you would have made almost 30% in terms of a total return with the S&P 500. So if you're doing that, and if you're riding that roller coaster, that is, volatility, even though it's felt pretty good. But it was not an up and down sort of situation before that. we sort of plugged along economically in this, you know, the economists that I followed call it a plow horse economy, right? But we sort of plugging along where the economy was growing and it was getting better and, you know, we're adding jobs and the market was doing pretty good. And we had little fluctuations, right? We had little days where, you know, it was news if we had more than a 1% move in a day. Oh my goodness, the market moved, you know, 1.5% today. And whether that was to the up or to the downside, it was big news. It was a big deal. And that has become the norm anymore. Today, you know, you should expect that. You should expect that going forward. This week, we had multiple moves of over 1%, and we'd have days where it moved 2% total breadth because it was down 1%. The S&P was down 1%, only to end the day up almost 1%. That's a giant swing if you're thinking about emotionally holding on in the market. The biggest thing that I can tell you, if you are going to be investing in the stock market, and I think you should, I think some portion of your retirement funds, of your investing dollars, should be allocated to this overall stock market. That's my feeling. And whether you're going to buy an index fund, if you're going to follow Susie Orman and just buy the indexes, or if you're going to have a, you know, a split, like a 60-40 split in the indexes between stocks and bonds, whether you're going to have managed accounts where individual money managers will help to manage that if you work with a financial advisor, no matter what you're doing, my advice is to have some portion of your money allocated to the stock market. And that includes when you're in retirement and in that distribution phase, because there's a thing called inflation that a lot of people don't think about. Maybe you think about it sort of conceptually, but you haven't really felt it. And we haven't had a whole lot of real inflation over the last couple of years either. Prices have remained relatively stable. They are going up, but not at the ways that they could before. And so when you have inflationary, you know, things happening, stuff costs more every year. If you're in retirement or if you're approaching retirement, no matter what, your dollar goes less far every year because stuff costs more. And whether you're using the dollar or whether you're using, you know, a euro or a Canadian dollar or whatever, that money, that fiat currency goes a shorter distance than it used to. And every year it gets worse. Now, that's not a bad thing, though. And a lot of people think of inflation as this boogeyman, this thing that's going to be terrifying and awful. And really, for the market, for the economy, for, you know, everything involved, inflation is actually not a bad thing. Deflation is actually bad for the overall market and for, you know, investing in general. Deflation is not great. Inflation is not bad. But in this environment where we have artificially low interest rates, we have interest rates that are super low or negative in some countries, then it's really hard to keep up with inflation in a safe manner. So really, you need to have some portion of your portfolio that's allocated to stocks, because those are the historically, traditionally, you know, since for the last 100 and something years, have been the way to combat inflation with your money. Now, you could take all your money and hide it under the mattress, and sometimes it feels like you should. Sometimes, you know, you get worried, you hear there's a lot of, you know, there's social unrest going on, there's an election coming up, there's this, there's that, there's the other thing, what's going to happen? I don't know, I need to take my money and just put it in a safe. And the problem is that, you know, that money is in a safe and it's not going to lose money in terms of being exposed to the market, but it's also not making you any money and it's actually losing money every day to inflation. So you're going to have some portion of your portfolio that is allocated to that inflation defense, or, you know, or to be allocated to, you know, something that will grow. Some portion of your portfolio should be in safe investments as well. And the thing about a diversified portfolio that a lot of people don't think about, cash is a position, right? You could buy treasuries. Those are traditionally the safest investment that's out there, right? You could own treasuries, T-bills, notes, you know, treasury bonds, you know, depending on how long dated you want to get with them. But those do technically have risk as well. Now, it's less risky than, you know, it's a risk-free rate because it's not going to default. But in terms of principal, if you're not holding on to that treasury and just clipping the coupon, just taking the interest and waiting till it matures, they might go down in price or up in price depending on the fluctuation in the interest rate environment. So cash is not a bad place to have some of your money and to be prepared for the volatility and opportunities for buying. When we talk about buying and opportunities in the stock market for buying, it's very counterintuitive, but the best time to buy is actually when it feels the worst, right? The best time to buy can be when the market is just crashing and you think, oh my goodness, there's no way that I should get in right now because everything's going down, down, down. But statistically speaking, when the probability is the highest that you're going to make money and the risk is actually the lowest, it's actually near the bottom of that, you know, of that trough. So if you had bought in sometime in the third week or fourth week in March, right there around the bottom. Now, nobody's going to time the bottom. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about some, you know, traps that I see people falling into when they talk about their investments. And basically, you know, if you watch CNBC or Fox Business and you see, you know, Fisher Investments, they have a really good ad campaign going on right now. But there's, you know, mistakes that people make that are pretty silly that involve timing the market. I'm not talking about timing the market, but if you're holding a quality investment, a quality company, you know, that you know is going to be there for the long term, if it's down 20%, it's on sale. And actually, historically and statistically, it's less risky to buy it then than it is to buy it when it's up because there's less room for it to drop, right? So it can be really, really difficult to wrap your head around because it doesn't feel good to buy something as it's going down, right? And you don't want to buy it as it's going down necessarily, but you want to buy it as close to the bottom as you can get, right? So if it's on sale, go ahead and buy it, right? If it's a company that you've wanted to own, if you've been talking about wanting to own that company, you know, and it was trading for $200 a share, you know, last week, and now it's down to 140, and you think, man, I think it could go down to 100. I would buy some at 140. Because you don't know that it's going to go down to 100. And if it goes down to 100, buy some more, right? But if it goes down to 140 and you didn't buy any and suddenly it jumps back up to 200, you're going to be sad, right? So if you are investing in the market, don't try to time it perfectly, right? If it's on sale, if it's at a price that you feel comfortable buying it, go ahead and purchase it. And if it's on the downward swing, if it's near the bottom, if it's a time like we had back in March, it could be the best time ever. That in March, towards the end of March, might have been the best buying opportunity in the stock market that we'll have for 15 or 20 years. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't buy stocks now. That doesn't mean that you can't invest your money, especially if you're still working or still accumulating. Now could be a good time to buy quality companies and quality stocks. But particularly when it has made those drastic moves, that's a good time to buy. You could make a lot of money at that point. And it's also statistically the worst time to sell, even though it feels like the time that you need to sell, right? So something to keep in mind when you're looking at the market is we're going to have these fluctuations. We're going to have this volatility. Now, I remain overall bullish on the outlook of the market long term. But in the short term, I think there's going to be some real fluctuations, some real volatility that may have buying opportunities. So look for those if you are at stock market investor, be ready to jump on those. And if you're already participating in the market with your 401k or your 403b, now is not the time to switch to, you know, the government securities fund and the TSP, for example. It's not the time to do that when the market is volatile. When the market is volatile like this, it is the time to be sending your money in there with every paycheck and getting that free money match and dollar cost averaging into high quality investments. That doesn't mean I think you should go buy, you know, Bob's oil rigs down the street. No offense, Bob. But it does mean that you should be buying in your 401k and in your 403b for the long term. So don't try to time the market. And I'll cover that as one of the, you know, it's one of the top 10 mistakes that I see people making, but it's one of the biggest ones is trying to time the market. So we're going to take a break here, and then I will be back with more, with answering some questions that have come in from listeners, answering some questions that I have been getting in my practice with clients people have been asking about, and also answering those lifelong questions about investing. And how's that for a tease? No, if you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, if you have something that you've been wondering about or hoping that we cover on the show, send that question to AskBo, A-S-K-B-O, at pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and leave that question there. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Bo Caldwell, CFP with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for staying with me if you've been with me so far today. And thanks for downloading the podcast. And if you do so, please make sure to rate and or leave a review on the podcast. We really appreciate it. If you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, something that is concerning you, whether it is in regards to investments, in regards to taxes, in regards to estate planning, any and all of the above, please make sure to send that to askbo@pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and leave the question there. We'll do our best to answer it. So one of the big things that I was talking about before, there's, you know, big mistakes, you know, you call the top 10 mistakes that people make when planning for retirement, or the top 5 mistakes you've been making, something like that. But really the big mistakes that I see people making, one of them is trying to time the market. I talked about that a little bit in the last segment, talking about, you know, people asking when's the right time to buy. And, you know, and I did mention that I think that when the market has gone down or is down near bottom, that's a great time to buy. And, you know, historically speaking, if you're owning shares in a company or in a fund that you really believe in, that you think is a high quality company or fund, you should be buying more when it has gone down because it's on sale. But that's not to say you should try and wait for the bottom, because you're going to miss out on the best moves in the market. You know, there's been countless studies that have been done on trying to time the market and how it just doesn't work, right? If you're a trader or a day trader, people trying to be, you know, traders, there are people that are successful doing that. There are, you know, statistically about 10% of the folks who try to trade are successful. And it's because of timing, because, you know, people get fearful, they get greedy, and they try to time the market, right? So they try to wait for the absolute top, or they try to wait for the absolute bottom, because they consider themselves a trader. If you're an investor, a long-term investor, then you should be focusing on buying high-quality stuff at a good price, but not the best price necessarily, and holding on to it for the long term. So the number one, you know, that's the number one thing that I see people doing wrong, is trying to time the market. And invariably, you're getting out at the exact time that you should be getting in, or vice versa. You're getting in when it feels really good, right? It feels, hey, this is finally turned around. Hey, this is a great time to get in. And then it turns out that's right near the top of the market, and the market's about to come back. I mentioned that we had a pullback that is healthy. Pullbacks in the market are healthy. You know, we need these flushes out, you know, you flushing out of overpriced stocks, and we need movements down in order to then move higher. And statistically speaking, historically speaking, that's what happens in the overall market. But if you're an individual investor, and I don't mean to poo-poo the amount of money that you have to invest, but it is a poo-poo piddly little amount compared to the big fellas, or big gals. I shouldn't be misogynistic. It's big gals and big fellas that are running these institutional funds. So there is, you know, between, you have these big fund managers like your BlackRock's, your Morgan Stanley's, your Fidelity's, your American funds, these big fund managers, A, that make purchases and they're trying to, you know, buy into the market at certain times. But B, it's also these institutions like, you know, Wellesley Capital that manages MIT's endowment fund, that manages the Bill and Melinda Gates fund. These endowments that are billions of dollars that are timing the market, and they're laughing all the way to the bank at those of us who try to get in and time the market, because they're waiting for us to push that price up on that stock. We're trying to buy it as it gets higher and higher, and then they turn around and sell right out, right? And they're selling based on us pushing their stock price higher, and they're moving billions, whereas we're moving much less, right? So it's going to move against you more often than not if you're trying to time the market. That's why 90% of people who try to become day traders or try to trade don't make it, because they are trying to time it with information that they don't have access to because they're not an institutional investor, and money they don't have access to because they're not an institutional investor. Now, that doesn't mean you can't take a shot. So I have clients all the time that call and say, hey, is now a good time to buy this stock or that stock? Or I have listeners that ask me, when should I buy this stock? You can take a shot with some of your money if you're willing to lose it. If you're going to try and be a trader, you're going to try and catch lightning in a bottle. That's a great, you know, that's a great idea. It's fun. You have to be willing to lose all of that money, though, if you're going to try and take that much risk. So don't time the market. That's, you know, that's the biggest one. Another one that's come up a lot lately, as you can well understand, because as we're in an election year that causes, historically always causes, volatility, a lot of people have been asking me, and this is clients and listeners both, that say, what is going to happen with the election and how is that going to affect the market? And the only thing that I can tell you with confidence that I believe is truly going to happen is we're going to have volatility. Because always people are emotional. The market reacts to emotions. A headline comes out. The president sends out a tweet. The, you know, a congressperson, you know, sends out a tweet. They find out that some congress people knew about the coronavirus, even though they said they didn't, and they sold their stock beforehand. All these things drive, you know, movements in the market. But if you're, again, a long-term investor, don't focus on that. And one of the big things that I see people making the mistake when they're talking about retirement investing is looking at the political climate and having that change how they're investing. That doesn't mean you have to that you shouldn't change and pay attention to the tax implications of your investments, that you shouldn't change, you know, pay attention to if we're doing Roth conversions, if we are contributing to a traditional IRA or 401k or a Roth IRA or a 401k because of tax, you know, changes. That doesn't mean we shouldn't pay attention to possibly different sectors that may go up or down based upon what, you know, a certain party that's in, you know, in power is doing. But I truly believe we give far too much credit and far too much blame both to whoever is in the White House, right? So we always say, hey, you know, this thing that's happening in the White House is because of this president, or this thing is happening because of that president. And presidents come and presidents go, folks, and the market continues to do its market thing. Now, that doesn't mean that certain presidents haven't been, you know, more positive conceivably for the market. But if you remember when President Trump was elected, first of all, when we had, you know, in 2016, we had the election, you know, and first of all, most economists, most stock market prognosticators said that there was no chance he was going to win, right? They said, you know, Hillary Clinton was leading in the polls and she was going to be good for the market. The market was going to go screaming up. And even some of the, you know, most of the economists that said that, and then some of them might have said, yeah, well, you know, it's possible that president, in other words, he wasn't the president at the time, that Donald Trump is going to win the presidency. And if he does, it's going to be terrible for the market. And if you were paying attention and if you were watching the market overnight, election night, when it was clear, it became clear that the president was leading and, you know, had the insurmountable lead in the Electoral College, it was clear that he was going to become president. The futures, if you pay attention to the futures, and if you're not sure what futures are, they are a tradable security, derivative security of the overall markets based on market sentiment and where we think the market is going to go. So you can actually make a bet on where you think the market is going to go. But those futures were in the toilet that night. And granted, in retrospect, looking at the size of that amount of downward movement, it just kind of pales in comparison to what's been happening over the last, you know, 6 months or so in terms of moves. But everyone still thought, okay, the president's going to win, but the market's going to go straight down. And what did it do? It went pretty much straight up, right? So to say that certain presidents or certain, you know, administrations are going to be disastrous for the market or super beneficial for the market, I think is giving those administrations too much credit. Alternatively, when, you know, the market goes down and an administration is in, I think it gives them too much blame. Ultimately, there are, you know, party platforms that presidents run on, and there are things that they try, or excuse me, you know, potential presidents or nominees, candidates, there's the word I'm looking for, that candidates run on. And oftentimes they're not able to pass a lot of the things that they run on. Or they change course once they get into office because they realize they need to get, you know, certain things done. So, and this is whether, you know, for folks when you're listening, I don't talk politics about who I like or who I don't like or who I want to happen, you know, have happen. I look at it from the perspective of how it's going to affect my clients and their investments. And the biggest thing you can do is do not change your overall investment philosophy because of politics, unless it's something crazy that's happening in politics. Doesn't mean you put your head in the sand, but presidents come and presidents go. Okay. And the market continues to do what the market does. So to say that a certain, you know, administration, or if, you know, if you're afraid of one thing, or if you're, you're a supporter of one candidate or the other, that shouldn't affect overall, in my personal belief, I have to put that caveat out there, right? This is how I look at it. You should be prepared for whatever happens. We need an all-weather portfolio, right? We need to be prepared for a rising or ebbing tide, no matter who is signing the stimulus check, no matter who is sitting in the Oval Office, because we've had Democratic presidents, we've had Republican presidents, we've had super conservative and super liberal presidents, we've had all the different, you know, colors of the rainbow, to borrow a phrase which really doesn't apply, but all the different, you know, ways that you could run a presidency, and the market has reacted the way that the market does because it is based on these companies and these fundamentals, although lately it has been behaving super illogically. But the market, you need to have your investment plan and your investment philosophy set out to handle whoever's in office, because one of the biggest mistakes you can make is changing that philosophy based on who's in office, or, you know, worse, who may get into office and then it turns out that you're wrong. But the people that are smarter than me, these bright minds, these economists that said, hey, this is what's going to happen in 2016, most of them were wrong, right? And whether they were wrong just about who they thought was going to win the election, but also about what they thought would happen once that election was won. So changing your philosophy based on that, don't be fearful. Have a plan that is built for no matter what happens in the White House or in Congress or anything like that. Now, you can affect that the way that you want by voting, right? You can go out and vote for the candidates, or, you know, be in communication with the candidates that you support or the folks that represent you to make sure that they are enacting policies that you believe in and that represent you. But don't, you know, conflate who's going to take over the White House or who's going to stay in the White House either way with what's going to drastically affect the stock market. The stock market will move with volatility because it is an election year, because so many people are changing their philosophy based on that, because they're letting their emotions drive the investing rather than logic, right? You want to invest logically, and it's really hard to disassociate, you know, your emotions from your money, because it is your money. You worked really hard to save it. It needs to last. It needs to grow. It needs to be safe, but it also needs to grow. And then this, you know, this or that might affect it. In the long run, buying high quality companies, you know, building your portfolio so that it's going to weather that storm is going to be your recipe for success. Whether or not the party that you support or the party that you identify with or the candidate that you like is in the White House or controlling the White House, right? So you want to make sure that you are managing your finances and managing your investments based on what the market is telling you, not based on what, you know, they say on the television or what, funny enough, what some radio personality tells you. So if you haven't had a look at your portfolio to make sure that it can withstand what may be coming with this, you know, political climate, what happens during election years all the time, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. I'm happy to sit down with you. Myself or somebody on my team will sit down with you, give you an unbiased opinion on what we think will happen to your portfolio based on the multitude of factors that affect the market. Because the biggest thing is we want to make sure that your plan is still in place, right? We want to take a comprehensive look at your roadmap and make sure that you're prepared for whatever potholes may come from an administration change, from tax changes, from any and all of the above. So give our office a call, 503-253-3000, if you'd like to sit down and chat about it. It's, again, always for radio listeners, no obligation, no cost consultation for you. So we're going to take another break here, and we'll be right back with more Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
And welcome back into Investing Simplified. However you're listening today, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sticking with us. I'm going to plug it one more time. If you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, something that you'd like to be covered on the show, please submit it to askbo@pfgwm.com, or you can submit it on investingsimplifiedradio.com, which is our text line if you're someone that doesn't necessarily want to have, you know, an email or anything like that. So I had a couple of questions that have come in, you know, basically through the text line that, you know, had asked that I want to answer. The first one is a question about what to do with $50,000 that's been sitting on the sidelines. So it seems like, so this listener says, hello, thank you for your service. I have a question as to what I should do with $50,000. 48 years old, no debt, $200,000 in retirement with a full-time job. Looks like $80,500 a year annual salary, but have no house or a mortgage. Would you recommend putting the $50,000 into the market, buying a house instead of living in an apartment, etc.? It says, I don't have an emergency fund, however, so looking for the best ROI over the next 20 years. So that's a really good question, and I want to get a lot. And that's the reason I wanted to bring it up on here, is if you've got some money that's sitting on the sidelines, what's the best way to invest it to get some ROI? Right. And if you don't know, ROI stands for return on investment. So a lot of times, you know, it depends on your particular situation. And I'm going to respond directly on the text line as well, but depends on your situation. If you are someone that wants to be a homeowner, that $50,000 could be a great down payment on a house. But the thing you have to consider when you are a homeowner is you don't actually own your house, right? The bank owns the house until you pay off the mortgage. And then a lot of people think, well, the mortgage is paid off, I'm done paying. No, no. You have property taxes. You have insurance. You have stuff that continues through the rest of time, including maintenance. So if you are someone that has traditionally been an apartment dweller, and there's nothing wrong with that, because rent, you'll say, well, rent goes up every year. Yeah, rent goes up every year, but so do property taxes. But the other thing is, when something breaks and you're a renter, when something breaks when you're renting an apartment, you don't have to spend your own money to fix it. So from an ROI perspective, a house can be a really good return on investment, particularly if the housing market continues to stay hot. We had Jen Singer on, you know, this last week, and she talked about, you know, hey, the housing market does seem to be going up and it's a seller's market right now. So it may not be the best time to buy, except for interest rates are super low. So it might be a really good time to buy, to invest that money. But the thing that I heard in there, and I hope if you've listened to me for a while now, you hear the same thing, I do not have an emergency fund. So for me, an emergency fund ties back into what we were talking about, the big mistakes that I see people making. And the emergency fund is a big one. And it's come particularly into view right now when you start looking at what's happened with the COVID-19 crisis. If you don't have disability insurance and you don't have an emergency fund, when you maybe are laid off or furloughed because maybe you work in an industry that is, you know, sensitive to COVID, or maybe you're not. Maybe you're in an industry that's not necessarily sensitive, but your company has just experienced, you know, some downturn and needs to furlough employees or lay them off. if you don't have a safety net, it can be a real problem. Now, that doesn't mean that this person or in general, you need to take, you know, $50,000 and put it away. But my rule of thumb that you need to have, and I was just talking to somebody the other day, I think it's Susie Orman's rule of thumb too. So just props to Susie for having that. You need to have 6 months of living expenses, right? So that's your rent. So that's in this particular person's experience, rent, utilities, and bills, right? So you need to be able to cover 6 months of your living expenses in an emergency fund. Now, if you don't have that right now, don't panic, right? You don't need the emergency fund right this moment, but start working towards it, right? Start saving money here and there, squirreling away money every paycheck, every month to get yourself to that emergency fund level, because you don't want to be at the point where you can't pay your bills, where you can't put food on the table. And that unfortunately is a case for a lot of people when they're not saving money into an emergency fund. Now, the ROI is not going to be great on that, right? Your return on investment in an emergency fund is not going to be great, because usually that's in a savings account, something that is liquid and safe and readily available to pay bills. And if you've been to the bank or the credit union lately, you know that savings accounts do not pay very much right now in terms of interest. There are a few online savings banks that do pay a pretty good rate. I've heard, you know, anywhere from 1.5% to 2% right now you can get on, you know, an emergency fund savings account at an online bank. And a lot of people are concerned about online banking and online banks, but as long as the bank is a member of FDIC, then I feel pretty comfortable with them, right? Because that FDIC is the key there, right? That's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, right? So it is backed by the federal government that they are good for up to $250,000 per depositor per institution, right? So if you have money that's been, you know, that is in your emergency fund, it might make sense to look at one of these online banks to see if they have, you know, a slightly better savings rate than you can get at the local credit union, or certainly that you can get at the big banks. And I do my banking, you know, at a big bank here locally, but, you know, my savings account doesn't earn me anything there, right? You could also take that money and invest it. But if you have that $50,000, I think the ROI, like I've talked about, is going to be better in terms of the market overall than in a house, because housing is slower growing, but it does grow quite well. And if you are a person who is comfortable with real estate as an investment property or just as a principal residence, if you're comfortable being a homeowner or being an investment property owner, that can be a really good diversifier, because it sounds like this person has a good amount of money in their 401k, which ostensibly is going to be stock market allocated. So the housing market historically is a good diversifier because it is what is called non-correlated. So correlation means how much do they move in tandem with each other, right? And so if the stock market goes up, something that has a high correlation is also going to go up. If the stock market goes down, you guessed it, something with a high correlation is also going to go down. So ideally, you want to have diversification in your portfolio, in your investments. But remember, I talked about before, cash is also a good place to have money, especially right now. So that $50,000 in cash or in a savings account in that emergency fund can make a lot of sense. Now, it's not going to have a big return on it, but it's going to have some returns. I would also suggest with that $50,000, consider a Roth IRA, right? Because this particular person that said this question is young, still has time to grow. And an IRA, a Roth IRA, you need to get started earlier because there is the 5-year rule. Okay. So we talked about it with Kevin a couple months ago now. Actually, I think the last time we were in the studio, we talked about it. So it's probably been a good 6 months. Good gravy. Boy, time flies, huh? But so it is, you know, a Roth IRA has a 5-year rule where you cannot remove the growth in there without a penalty and without interest unless the Roth has been open for 5 years. The money that you're pulling out does not have to have been in there for 5 years. The Roth just has to be open for 5 years. So you could take $1,000, you could take $100 really, open a Roth IRA and then start that clock. Then you can start putting money in there. And this person is, you know, in their 40s, they have time till they're going to want to pull the money from the Roth. You want some good ROI. You can be quite aggressive in that Roth. Let's grow that money. Let's put that $6,000 a year that we can put into a Roth. Let's get it plugged into that Roth IRA. let it grow. Let's invest in some growth companies. Let's buy some stocks. Let's put the money in the market, let it grow. And by the time that 20 years from now, if we can average 7% a year, which is a reasonable number to think about averaging, if you're just, you could buy the S&P 500 index and average that. So if your reasonable expectation to average that kind of money, you could double your money twice in the next 20 years. So even if you only put the 6,000 in there, then you could double that to 12, and then 10 years later, you double it again. That's a returning 7% with the rule of 72. So if you aren't familiar with the rule of 72, and if you are, this is going to be remedial, but you can take the amount interest that you're getting, right, and divide it by 72, and then you get how long it takes to double. So 7, rough math, 10 years, your money doubles. So if you start that Roth early, you can potentially double your money twice. And that's exponential math, which you've probably heard a lot when listening to people talk about COVID-19 and how the cases spread exponentially. Let's make that exponential math work for you and your retirement funds. So I would consider a Roth IRA. So in answer to the question, which has been a really long-winded answer to that question, but I would consider an emergency fund, and I would consider fully funding a Roth IRA. Now, if you want to be a homeowner, if you want to buy a house, that's not a bad investment at all. But you have to be prepared to be a homeowner rather than renting, right? And there are arguments for both situations, and both of them are valid because you can build equity when you own your home, yes, but you also have a mortgage that you're paying, and you're paying interest on that equity. It's nice to gain equity personally. I would rather be a homeowner than a renter. But I'm also comfortable with the fact that when the water heater breaks or when the roof goes out or when the gutters leak, I have to fix that. I have to be responsible for and pay to fix that. So as long as you're okay with that, being a homeowner is not a bad plan. So another question that came in, and it ties in because we're talking about, you know, homeownership and housing, is how COVID-19 and people losing their jobs is going to affect housing. And I would say it's probably going to be a similar effect to what happens anytime we have high unemployment rates, right? Is that as people are unemployed, they are less likely and less able to purchase a home, or less likely to get a loan, or less likely to afford their rent. Now, I know that Congress is in talks right now to extend the rent moratoriums to help with unemployment. And I think they get something figured out to help those folks that aren't allowed to go back to work in this forced shutdown. But yes, ostensibly long-term, I don't think it's going to have the negative deleterious effect that a lot of people think, because I think as the economy starts to ramp back up and people start to get back to work, as we start to figure out the new normal, as it were, I think that the housing market is going to be okay overall, is my answer to that question as well, right? So if you are stable in your job, if you think that you have have stability in there, you want to use that $50,000 for a down payment, I think that's great. I would encourage you to, again, get the emergency fund started, or at least a portion of it, and think about fully funding a Roth IRA for right now with that money. Now, in terms of the overall investments, you know, a lot of people know I can't give personalized investment advice over the radio because I don't know this person. I haven't met them. I haven't gotten to know their whole situation. But if you're looking for good ROI, some good investment ideas, something that we can put to work, and you want to work with a fiduciary firm like ours, then give us a call, 503-253-3000, or shoot me an email at bo@pfgwm.com. This is Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
All right, welcome back into Investing Simplified. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for sticking with me as I pull it out alone today. Taylor and Kevin could not make it today, and I don't have another guest, but we wanted to let you know in the coming weeks, I'm going to have a PERS expert come on with us. And so if you have questions for that, our PERS expert, he's a good guy. He's been on with Chuck a couple of times. Come on with me. He's going to join me here in the next couple of weeks. If you have a PERS question, not about the investment side, but about how to maximize getting the money out of PERS and what the ins and outs of PERS and claiming your PERS are, make sure to include that in your question to askbo@pfgwm.com, or go ahead and send it there on investingsimplifiedradio.com. When he comes on, what he does is just help folks that are working with PERS and trying to figure out what they are going to do. I also wanted to give a plug. We have, you know, a client of ours that is a very good, you know, charitable organization here in Portland called Bethany House. And if you're not familiar with Bethany House, they are a Christian organization that helps at-risk young women get back on their feet. So generally speaking, you know, young women who are struggling, you know, sometimes from abusive relationships or just, you know, having trouble, you know, finding work, finding careers, and they house those women, help them get on their feet and help them get life started with, you know, usually with young children. They are a Christian ministry, so they do not make money. They are a not-for-profit organization. Actually, I guess they're a nonprofit is the distinction, not a not-for-profit, but a nonprofit. So they survive only on donations, and they are currently looking for, if there are companies out there or investment, you know, people out there that are looking to you know, maybe donate some funds. They are more than happy to, you know, to take those donations, and they put them really to good work. You can visit BethanyHouse.org to find out about them. And they do a lot of good work. You'll be able to see, you know, stories on there of the amazing young women and the stories of how they have overcome the adversity in their lives through the help of this Christian ministry. I know that Bethany House is also looking for a donation of a fourplex or a duplex, but preferably I think a fourplex. So if you have been sitting on a duplex or a fourplex investment property and worried about the capital gains that you might have to pay in selling that property, you want to get out of that property, I would consider working with them on a charitable donation scale. And there are ways that we can make that work on that charitable donation, where you can donate that to charity. It comes off on your tax deduction. We can work with your CPA. If you want us to help you do it, I'm not a go-between for them or anything. I really believe in what they're doing. And so, you know, offered to plug them here on the radio. So if you want more information, you're welcome to call our office at 503-253-3000. We can shoot you over their newsletter, or visit BethanyHouse.org. They are a great charitable organization here locally in Portland, and they need our help. So if it's something, if you are charitably inclined, I would encourage you to check them out. Speaking of charities, I wanted to talk to you all a little bit about charitable donations, as I, you know, I'm charitable myself, and I have a lot of clients that are charitable. We have longtime listeners that have taken advantage of the QCD, or the qualified charitable, you know, distribution when you're doing your RMD. And this year it's waived, right? It is waived in 2020. You don't have to take an RMD. And, you know, speaking of which, I have gotten that question a couple of times, where people say, well, if I don't have to take my RMD and I don't need it, am I going to get penalized next year? Are they going to double it up? I don't think so. I don't know. I'm not involved in the discussions about the CARES Act or the SECURE Act or any of that stuff. They don't, you know, involve me in that. But my understanding is it is waived for 2020. That means waived. It means you do not have to take the money out. Still can, but do not have to. So you do not have to take your RMD for this year. And while your RMD next year will ostensibly be higher because you're 1 year older and you didn't take the money out of your account, so as long as the account is not, you know, bleeding in value and is going down, 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 the RMD amount will probably be higher next year. So for those who don't know, the RMD is based off of your December 31st balance of the previous year. So your 2021 RMD will be based off of the balance in your account December 31st of 2020. So they base that up, but then you have all year to take it out. But please pay attention and make sure that you take it out once, if the RMD is still required next year, if they don't pass, you know, more COVID, you know, regulations, but please take it out. It is the largest tax penalty that the IRS can lever, and it's huge. It's 50% of whatever you were supposed to take out. That's your penalty, and you still have to take out the RMD, and you got to pay taxes on it, right? It's just horrible if you get behind. The big thing where I've seen this really come back to bite people is an inherited IRA or beneficiary IRAs. So if you inherited an IRA or have a beneficiary IRA that you inherited after January 1st, 2020, this doesn't apply to you. There are no RMDs. You are now subject to the 10-year withdrawal rule. So within the first 10 years of inheriting it, you have to take all of the money out. But that could all be in year 10. You don't have to take one-tenth out each year. You can structure it and plan for taxes the way that it's going to work best for you. However, if you inherited that IRA or that 401k or that 403b, if you inherited an account prior to January 1st, 2020, you have RMDs every year that you have to take out. And that's if you inherited it from your brother, from your aunt, from your parent, from your sibling. Any place that you've inherited other than your spouse, which we'll cover in a second, then you need to take RMDs out of that account. And if you don't, it is that 50% penalty. And if you missed it for the last couple of years, not only is there a penalty, there's RMDs, there's taxes, and there's interest that you got to pay on that, on those back RMDs. So make sure you are keeping track of that. If you have inherited an account, that is part of the process. Now, the thing that people don't know, the custodian or the advisor where you are at is not required to take care of that for you. I'll say that again. They are not required to take care of that for you. Now, they should. They should be doing that for you. And if they're a fiduciary firm, then they absolutely should, because the word fiduciary, again, a lot of people don't know this. The word fiduciary means that advisor or that firm has to put your needs ahead of theirs. They have to always make sure they are doing the best thing for you. Put your needs, put your interests ahead of their own. Always, always, always. And so if you're working with a fiduciary firm like Price Financial Group, we take care of those RMDs. We make sure that you get them out. We make sure that we're tracking them and make sure that you don't miss that. But a lot of firms don't, and you may not have known that because maybe you inherited an IRA from, you know, your uncle who lived in Missouri and worked with a Merrill Lynch guy over there. And Merrill, not to pick on Merrill Lynch, it was just a name that I picked out. But that Merrill Lynch guy called you and said, hey, you've got this inherited IRA. What do you want us to do with it? And then they didn't talk to you because, you know, you're under the $250,000, you know, requirement where you get an actual advisor that you talk to. And you think this is crazy, but I just met with someone who this happened to, and she had 4 years of back RMDs that we have to take care of. 4 years. That's huge. And if it's a larger account, oh my goodness, that could be $20,000 or $30,000 that you were supposed to have taken out of that account. So let me reiterate that again. If you were supposed to have taken out $20,000 to $30,000, your penalty is $10,000 to $15,000 in a penalty, folks. Not that you have to take out and get to keep. No, no. That's the tax penalty that you owe. Please make sure that you're keeping up to date on your RMDs, whether they are from a beneficiary IRA or from your individual IRA, which again, a lot of people may not know this. We've talked about it ad nauseum, but if it's your own IRA, you now get to wait till 72 until you take those RMDs instead of 70 and a half, which is kind of nice. But if you are in that situation where you're taking an RMD and you don't need it, because that happens a lot, you know, more than you'd think, where people, you know, have saved up a lot and maybe they're on a good pension. Maybe they have PERS. Maybe they have, you know, another pension from another company, but they don't need that RMD. If so, I would urge you to consider the QCD. Okay. It's a great way to be charitable. It's a great way to help out a cause. And whether that's like Bethany House, like, you know, we support, or if you want to support another cause, your church, you know, support your nonprofit that, you know, the you could support the ASPCA, you could support the Humane Society. If you're an animal lover, you can support any of those nonprofits. Consider sending that RMD direct to them with a QCD. That's a qualified charitable distribution. It's really nice because it never hits your taxes. You get to satisfy your RMD. It's not a write-off. It just never hits your taxes. It's not taxable income. It's ostensibly not a deduction. It's ostensibly a credit, but it's not really, because you just never hits your tax return. And that charity gets to be taken care of. You get to help somebody out. Okay, so if that's something you've been exploring but aren't really sure how to do it and you want to hear more about it, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We'd love to hear about it. We'd love to help you take care of that charity, help you do some good, and put that good out there in the world. I think, you know, it's something we all need at this particular trying time is more good in the world, right? Doing more good, helping out those in need, helping those folks that may need it. You know, these charitable ministries, or the, you know, whether you're, if you're not a, you know, if you're not, you know, of the religious ilk, if you want to not do a ministry thing, if you would prefer to help out a charity that, like I said, helps out, you know, animals or helps out the less fortunate, whatever your flavor of charity, there's, you can do it with the American Heart Association, any of that stuff, American Cancer, you can donate it to cancer research. These are all positive things and ways that we can affect positive change, which I think is what we really need, you know, in the world right now, is to help affect positive change. So there, I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you for listening to me, you know, soapbox about, you know, charitable giving, because I really do believe in it. But if you have questions about it, if there's something we covered or you want to have covered, shoot me an email, askbo@pfgwm.com. As always, if you want a consultation on your portfolio, on your charitable giving options, on your RMDs, your inherited IRAs, any and all of the above, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. Thank you so much for listening out there. I hope you're staying safe and healthy, and God bless you all. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. We do investing simplified.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.